welcome to Inspired Island, where every episode we sit down with someone living an inspired life here on Vashon Island in Puget Sound. From world-class artists and musicians to chefs and business owners, our little rural island has it all. I'm your host, Grace McCray, a new full-time Vashon Island resident, and thank you for joining me on this journey to discover why Vashon is such an inspired island. And hello, everyone. Today is going to be a very fun episode because my new friend, Jeff Fletcher, is here in the studio. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you, Grace. Thanks for having me.
Well, now, Jeff wears many hats here on Vashon Island, so you might know him in many different capacities. If you're a regular Voice of Vashon listener, you might know Jeff from his show, Boogie Back to Texas, which I believe airs on Wednesdays at 7 p.m.
Wednesday live at 7 o'clock, and then it's repeated on Thursday at 6.
All right, so two chances to listen to Boogie Back to Texas. And during the show, Jeff celebrates music and musicians from Texas, where he spent many years living and working, and I'm excited to hear about that. And what you may not know about Jeff is that he's also heavily involved behind the scenes here at Voice of Vashon. So he's very dedicated to public radio and connecting the community to Voice of Vashon. But I was personally introduced to Jeff in another capacity as president of Vashon Island Pet Protectors. I've become involved with VIP, and their mission is quite simple: no more homeless pets. But the organization's reach on the island is quite incredible. VIP is run by volunteers, many of whom invest incredible amounts of time into providing shelter, food, and medical care to dogs and cats who are waiting for loving forever homes. So I know Jeff is a very busy guy, and I really appreciate him taking the time to come speak with us today.
Well, thank you, Grace. I had to get up from a nap to do this. I was that busy.
So, Jeff, I'd love to know where your story began and where you grew up, what you were like as a child.
I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, in a little community that was to the east of Cincinnati called Marymount, spelled Marymount, but it's Marymount. And as a child, I was, well, a little mouthy, if you can imagine that. I seemed to have some problems keeping my mouth shut. And my kindergarten ratings all the time said I had checks or red checks for everything except I had a red X for Jeff Knows When to Be Quiet. And in my second grade, I remember being put into Mrs. Uvis's cloakroom. We had cloakrooms back then. It was nice little rooms you can put your coats and lunches and things. And I was put back there because I was making too much noise. Actually, I was bored, and I was making up stories. Mm. And my favorite hero, TV hero at that time, was Jonathan Winters, who made all these noises and sound effects and stuff. And so I was making those sound effects both at my desk, and then when I went in the cloakroom, I had to do the same thing in there. And I also switched lunches around. So I saw one lunch had an apple in it, another one had an orange in it. I switched those around because, again, I was bored.
Entertaining yourself.
Well, yeah. But I was a good kid. I didn't get kicked out of school. Not that I know of.
We'll have to talk to your family members. And did you have any siblings growing up?
I have an older brother.
Okay.
Yes. And he's still there.
Oh, okay.
Not in school. He's still there.
In Cincinnati.
In Cincinnati, yes.
Area. I know some of your passions as an adult, including music and animals. Were these passions evident in your childhood at all?
Not really. I was in chorus in high school, and I was an athlete in high school. And those were my passions at the time, primarily being an athlete and staying out of trouble so I could still play both football and basketball and golf as well.
Oh, wow.
I was a three-season sport person, which means I didn't have to take PE. Kind of nice.
But you were still keeping quite busy back then.
That's right.
So how long were you in Cincinnati?
Well, I was in Cincinnati. I graduated from high school, went to college at Miami University, Oxford, Ohio, 45056, which is just north of Cincinnati by about 45 miles.
Hmm.
And graduated from there, and then graduated, and then I went to graduate school and got a master's degree in education and teaching, and then I taught school for about 10 years in the Cincinnati area.
Okay, and did you go to college to become a teacher?
No, I went to college in order to be away from home, have a good time, and maybe learn a little bit, and I was an English major, and then by the time I finished, and I was found out that I was not going to be drafted. This is 1970. Found out I wasn't going to be drafted, so I decided I wanted to teach at the university level. And I asked people, did you take teaching courses before you taught at the university level? And they all looked at me like I had 16 heads because no, nobody did that. And their teaching style kind of reflected that. They didn't know how to teach very well. So I decided to go back and learn how to teach. And I did that and got my Master of Arts in Teaching. And then part of that was student teaching. And I realized in student teaching that English was important to me, but I was really teaching kids. I wasn't teaching English. And that kind of changed my career trajectory to stay and teach at the junior high school and high school level for 10 years.
Okay. And did you love it?
I did. It was a blast. I mean, the middle school kids in particular are crazy. They're crazy. They've got hair sprouting out in different places and their hormones are going nuts. And it was that was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure it kept you on your toes. My mom's a third grade school teacher, but she likes it because she says they're still sweet and they haven't gotten to that middle school age and start testing the boundaries a little bit more.
Right.
And so I know you have had quite a stint in Texas. So when did Texas come into the picture?
Well, I got my doctorate as well in education and at the University of Cincinnati. And then I was teaching at Miami University, went back there to teach. And one night, Terry and I were overserved in our own house, and we said, let's get out of the Midwest. We woke up the next morning and said, did we really say let's get out of the Midwest? And I had some friends in Texas who taught at the University of Houston at Clear Lake, and I called them up, and they said, come on down. The whole place is booming, and you're definitely going to get a job teaching in the schools down here. And I did, found a job down there, and it was near the University of Houston at Clear Lake, so I could teach at the university part-time and teach at a school district part-time as well. So I did that for 2.5 years. And then I was decided that I had the opportunity to go to Austin and work for the State Department of Education. And I took Terry out to lunch at one point and said, would you rather live in Houston or in Austin? And she said, is this a trick question? And I said, no. And she said, well, let's go to Austin. I said, it's a pay cut. And she said, that's all right. So the second or third time you've taken a pay cut. I said, okay, let's go. So we did.
And Terry sounds quite adventurous. How did you meet Terry?
This is a great story. She, her sister was in one of my classes when I was teaching in the middle school at the junior high school.
Okay.
Her younger sister. And so she decided that Terry and I should meet. So I ran the clock at the junior high school basketball games. Terry's sister was a cheerleader. And so she said, my sister's going to pick me up at the game tomorrow, so you'll get a chance to meet her. I said, all right. So I put on my black turtleneck sweater and my gray flannel slacks and my cowboy boots, and I was looking pretty hot.
Yeah.
Terry was not told that she was going to meet me, so she's up in the bleachers. Julie comes bouncing over to me at halftime, like cheerleaders do, and said, my sister's here. So we went over to meet her sister. And we started to say hello, and just then the Milford Junior High School pep band went, and we could not hear a thing in the junior high gym. But eventually we got together, primarily through Terry's initiative. She wanted to borrow some books from me, and after the second time that she asked for books, and I sent books back with Julie, her sister, then about that time I realized, maybe we should go out. Because her note back to me to thanking me said, thank you for the books. Maybe we should go out and have a cup of coffee or drink sometime. And that's when I said, oh, I get it.
I can take a hint.
It took a while, but yes.
Wow. And I hope Julie got lots of points for being the matchmaker there.
Well, she does. She did. She still does. Although she and her cheerleader friends, the first night that Terry and I went out and Terry was still living at home, she and her cheerleader friends were waiting inside the house behind the curtains looking at us when we started to come up to the front door, which was amusing.
That's amazing. That's like made out of a movie.
Yeah.
And so Terry sounds like she was happy also in Texas.
Yes. And she said not that long ago that was one of the best things we ever did, was to go to Texas, because it is indeed a whole nother country. And it's a blast. The culture down there, the diversity that's down there is astounding, and it was a lot of fun. It was a learning experience to be around all that.
Right. And how long did you end up spending in Austin?
In Austin, we were there for about 17 years.
Wow. Okay, so you must have seen the city grow quite a bit.
Yeah, got out of hand.
Yeah.
Still is out of hand.
I know. I've been a couple times, and it's amazing that the growth is evident, but I think it was a well-kept secret for a while, and now the secret's out.
Yeah, right.
What was sort of your career trajectory in Austin? What did that look like?
So I started work at the State Department of Education as a pay grade 18 kind of grunt, grunt worker, but I was in the technology arena, the educational technology arena. This is 1985. And so you can imagine the computers then, you don't remember that. The computers then were Apple IIs and maybe Apple IIes. So it was a very, very different time and technology. But we were a true leader in the country at that time because we were able to push a bill through the legislature that financed a number of things, including a statewide information system, a network, an educational network. We put a satellite dish into every single school district, and we had created a technology allotment in the amount of $30 per student. And when there are about 3 million students in the state, that's a lot of money. So we were able to do that and push that whole thing through and did a long-range plan for technology as well, which was the first in the country. So we really, I think, did a lot of pretty cool stuff starting out.
And during that time, were you teaching in the classroom at all, or was it all business meetings type?
I was a full-time bureaucrat.
Yeah. And what was that like for you? Did you miss the interaction with the students, or did you like the sort of the big picture thinking?
I really liked the big picture thinking, and it fit more closely with my doctoral work, which is in future studies in education, where you look at things more holistically. And so that was a lot more interesting to me and a lot more fun. Different emotions, certainly, but it was the kind of thing that I really liked, creating policy and trying to make sure that policy gets implemented well, but also doing it in a way that was much more helpful to school districts than the typical bureaucrats may be.
Right.
They would, most of the time, they would call the state and say, can we do this? And the state would say, no.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, why not? And they would say, well, my superintendent said I can't do it because it's against the law. And I said, you tell your superintendent to point out where in the law it says that, because it doesn't say that anywhere, and you can do that.
Right.
So that was kind of fun to do that as well. And because I was working with technology, it was completely new to a lot of people, including all my bosses. And all they said, I said, I want to do this. And they said, I don't get it, but just don't screw it up. And they had that kind of faith and confidence in me, which was terrific. And we had a lot of people doing some pretty cool things.
That's really interesting. Yeah, and I think that's, as you say, it's a part of the education system that it has to continue to evolve and change. It can't get too stagnant.
Right.
And so what was after your time being a bureaucrat?
Well, and the time being a bureaucrat also evolved a little bit too, because okay. I was with educational technology first, and then I was put in charge of all of information systems for the state internally as well. And that was brutal. It was painful.
Mm.
It was hard. And I didn't know anything about it either. So anyway, that was really difficult. And then I was able to go back to the side that I knew better, which was curriculum and assessment and textbooks, and became in charge of all of the textbooks in Texas and all of the testing in Texas and all
wow.
the curriculum in Texas, as well as the educational technology stuff. And that was kind of fun, because what we tried to do was to meld all those things together rather than have them so separate in silos. And to do that in a state education agency is a little bizarre. And it was very different. And we got a lot of pushback, but in many cases, it worked really well.
That must be such a big task when you're talking about a state like Texas, which, I mean, I guess it's like a little country in of itself.
Right. And the interesting thing about Texas and California and Florida, although Texas does this more than the others, that Texas buys all the textbooks for all the kids for all the subjects.
Wow.
And so it's an enormous program. And it's the best free theater in all of Texas is the State Board of Education hearings every November, where people come in and testify about the textbooks, and all the wing nuts come in, the right wing and the left wing, and it's just wild. It's
wow.
really, it's a blast.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Because like I said, I've become friends with you in the last few months. I know that you had a stint in the magazine industry as
right.
well. When did that come into the picture?
Well, there was a change in the State Board of Education and a change in the commissioner. And the State Board of Education in particular became very, very politicized, very right-wing. And I went to the commissioner and said, I can't work with them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the kids' best interest at heart. And I've been offered another position to work with in the technology and education publications world. And he said, I'll be about 6 months behind you.
Wow.
And it was 9 months, but he left as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I had an opportunity to ultimately become editor of two technology and education magazines, which was it's a lot of fun to do that as well. I learned a lot. And the nice thing about it is that we were able to have stories about what was going on in school districts throughout the country and their use of technology. So that was fun to learn about that, and also to learn about the whole magazine. It's a trade publication, so it's driven by advertising. So I learned a lot about companies, because companies wanted to talk to me as the editor so that they could get their stuff in the magazine. And I didn't care about their getting stuff in the magazine or not, but I wanted to learn about what they were doing. So that was a lot of fun to learn about all the new technologies that were being used in education.
Right. And your skills, I feel like, as an editor are a little bit like unique. Where did you pick up the skills that you needed for that role? Do you think it was just kind of through your evolution as an educator that you sort of picked up what you needed?
I taught writing when I was a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have a relatively good ear for that kind of thing, I think. And
yeah.
That's it. There was no formal training, believe me. And probably real editors would look at me and laugh out loud. But it worked out okay.
Yeah, definitely.
And I didn't do the hard stuff. I did the big work. When an article would come in, I would say, this really completely misses the mark, and that's got to go back, and I'll talk to the author about rewriting it and how to rewrite it. I had somebody else who really looked at crafting the words and moving clauses around and stuff like that. I didn't do that level.
And was this an office culture at the magazines, or were you working remotely?
I was working remotely.
Okay.
Working out of my living room in Austin starting in 96, and then when we moved up here, worked out of the house here.
Yeah, and I'm excited to get to this part of this story because I know a little bit, but I think there's more to the tale. So how did you and Terry make the move from Austin, Texas to Vashon?
Well, in a couple ways. One way is how did that decision-making happen, and the other is how we got here, which was getting a car. But the decision-making was not that difficult. It was surprisingly easy. And it was similar to how we moved to Texas, which was we realized it's hot in Austin after spending 19 years in Texas total. And we also realized how crowded Austin was getting, and it was losing the kind of feel that we really liked about it. And so we decided, let's go. And we had vacationed in the San Juan Islands up here a lot and really liked that. Put a bid in some property on Orcas Island and was outbid. And then there's a ferry crash on Orcas in 99, and there was just no way in the world that I was platinum on an airline at that point that I was going to be able to work around that whole notion if that ever happened again.
Yeah.
So a friend of ours in Austin said, look at Vashon, and we did. And I came up here. I was doing some consulting, came up here and looked at the island and looked at property, and I was up here once, and then I went home and said, Terry, you really need to go up there. And she said, okay. And she went up, came up here and looked, and we bought the property that we have now. So we'd each been on the island once, and we were not together at the time when we made that decision.
What do you think it was about Vashon that really spoke to you and Terry?
Well, for one thing, coming from Texas, the scenery and the whole feeling about this, about the Northwest in general, is so different.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt really good in that way. Driving up from the ferry gave us this is a kind of a rural place. It's not like Bainbridge where you drive, you get right into a town. And it was also that rural nature. And yet somehow there was this sense of community on the island that you could even feel just being here briefly, like we were the first time. People, Terry made the comment, you know, people in the grocery store like working there and they like each other. And it had a bookstore and it had a variety of different things that we felt we really needed, like a good bakery and so on. So here we go.
Did you just dive right into the community, or was it sort of more of a slower evolution?
I would say we dove right in. It was, we came here May 13th, 2001 on the 530 boat, and at Strawberry Festival that year, I was wearing a t-shirt that from Animal Trustees of Austin, where Terry and I volunteered as well, that had a slogan, a saying on it that said, the best alternative to a condom for Fido is Animal Trustees of Austin, because they provided low-cost spay neuter.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody saw that t-shirt and said, do you know about VIP? And I said, no, I don't know anything about that. got introduced to the people at VIP and Barbara Drinkwater. She said, you ought to come to a meeting. And so the following Thursday, we went there, and Terry and I walked in the door, and she said, ah, here comes the people in charge of our new feral cat program. Really? I didn't know that.
That's amazing.
So that's how VIP started, and started, both Terry and I started volunteering with VIP, and also we got to know at that time, the Vashon Allied Arts, and Terry, as an artist, became involved with them somewhat, and then I was asked to be on the board of Vashon Allied Arts, and so I joined the board there as well. So we got involved in the arts community pretty quickly. We got involved in the crazy community around pets on this island, both of those within the first year or so of being here.
For those listeners who aren't very familiar with VIP, would you mind kind of describing what the organization is and does?
It's an all-volunteer organization here on the island whose mission is no more homeless pets. And what we do is offer low-cost spay-neuter services, low-cost microchipping services, lost and found, financial assistance to those people who need it in an emergency. I got a call today for example, from a cat who was blocked, urinary tract was blocked, and they had to do something quickly. The woman just didn't have any money to do it. Mm. And so we help with that, and she'll pay us back as much as she can. And so we do those kinds of things. We have a shelter for cats on the island. Right now, I think there are about 27 or so cats in that shelter. And we have probably between 40 and 50 volunteers go out every week to that shelter, scoop the poop, and they feed the cats, medicate the cats, and provide TLC to them every single day.
Wow.
And then the dog program is amazing, especially the lost and found work that they do, and then the lost dog Henry, where the vampires are out at night tracking Henry and trying to trap him to get him home. And there's some foster homes for both the dogs and the cats. So it's quite an organization.
Absolutely. As president of VIP, what have been sort of the standout moments for you since taking leadership roles?
Well, the stories of various situations where cats and dogs have been rescued, in particular dogs have been rescued and rehoming lost dogs and cats. The whole story of Phoebe and Tilly that happened a few years ago that went internationally viral when Phoebe was caught in a cistern and was missing. And Tilly, her companion buddy, would stay with Phoebe by the cistern for days and days and days, and then would go out periodically to try to find somebody to bring and rescue them both. Mm. And sure enough, Amy Carey and the dog people were out looking for Phoebe and Tilly for days and days. And finally somebody said, there's this red dog that's been going back and forth, and I think he's trying to tell us something. Sure enough, they found Phoebe in the cistern, and she was fine. Hungry, but she was fine. That story, because it was posted on Facebook and so on, it went viral. We got phone calls from Denmark and from Japan and other people who wanted to write that story and wanted the rights to use the photographs and so on from there. It was on ABC News, on the nightly news. It really took off. And I think that story really embodies a lot about what VIP does on this island, to do the lost and found, but also the way that the volunteers are involved and connecting with the community.
Yeah, right when I came to Vashon, knowing that VIP existed gave me a little extra peace of mind. Having my own dog and knowing that you don't have to be talking about adopting a pet to know that VIP's going to be there for you if your animal gets lost or if you come across tough times. I think it's really, really pretty unique organization on the island. And pivoting to another one of your many passions here on the island, Boogie Back to Texas. When did your involvement with Voice of Vashon begin?
Started about 2.5, well, close to 3 years ago now. And the studio in the storefront studio, now the Gene Bosch broadcast studio, was just being created. And I went to Susan McCabe and said, you're looking for new shows? And she said, sure, what do you got? So I gave her the idea and pitched it. And she said, well, we don't have anything like that. And so, yeah, let's try it out. And so it is entirely way too much fun. Terry maybe will be gone for a couple hours in the morning. She'll come home and say, what have you been doing? And I said, listening to music. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I figured that out. So it's been way, way too much fun to listen to music by Texas musicians. And that's a broad definition because I, for example, David Crosby was in jail for 9 months in Texas. And so I consider him a Texan.
There you go.
So I can play his music.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I really try to do on the show is to make sure that people understand Texas music is not just country music. It is also jazz and it's rock and roll. And it's a variety of other things as well. It's big band.
And have you met any other Texans on the island?
Yeah, I have met a few. And I get notes from people sometimes saying, oh, I remember that person. I remember seeing Lyle Lovett. And it was so much fun to hear him again on your show. And it's also an opportunity for me to talk about some of the interactions I had with some people in Texas around music. I met Lyle Lovett's parents and spent a whole evening during a Lyle Lovett concert with his parents sitting at the same table, and they were telling stories about him. Mm. And remember when he wrote that song when he was a sophomore in high school, they would say to each other. So that was really a lot of fun.
Oh, that's awesome. And thinking about 2019, so we're pretty early into the year now, what are some of the things on the horizon for you that you're really excited about or feeling passionate about?
My next show.
Okay. There we go.
No, it's continually exciting. Keep that thing rolling. And at VIP, we've had a terrific retreat in which we pulled together a whole bunch of initiatives that we're undertaking right now. And I think it's going to be an improvement in the organization as a result of that work. And it's going to take us to the proverbial next level as well.
That's really exciting. Well, thank you so much for all the volunteering you do through VIP.
It's fun. It's really rewarding. And it's also provided us with a whole bunch of cats in our house. So we like that.
I can attest there's some very cute cats at Jeff and Terry's house. Well, we have been ending every show with a fun little quickfire question round. So are you ready to just tell us what's top of mind for the following questions,
sure,
Jeff?
Sure.
All right. So first up is, do you have a favorite beverage here on Vashon?
More than one. Is that okay?
Oh, sure.
Because if it's not okay, it is okay.
Exactly.
So there's some great wines that are made on the island. There's the Palouse Winery and the Andrew Will Winery and then the Vashon Winery. And all three of them produce really good wine. And I have the opportunity to drink that periodically, daily. So the wine is really good. And the coffees, the various entities that are making coffee on the island is pretty impressive as well.
And if you're not at home, where can people most often find you on the island? Do you have any favorite haunts?
Yes. I spend a lot of time at the Roastery, Minglement, the Roastery.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have been known to spend a little bit of time at the hardware store at the in the bar level area.
Nice.
And some time at Gravy as well.
Okay.
At the restaurant there.
Very cool. And do you have any pet peeves about island living that you've discovered since moving here?
Well, this is kind of a weird peeve.
Okay.
And that is, it's what the ferries do to me.
What do
so
you
it's,
mean?
It's not so much the ferries themselves, but it's what they do to me. Because there's that 10:20 boat in the evening. And so if I'm at a concert at the Triple Door in town, and the concert's wrapping up, and do I miss the encore to bust my rear end to get on the boat, the 10:20 boat? Do I stay and make it the 11:40 boat? Or if I'm in a Mariners game, it's the bottom of the seventh inning and it's getting to be close to 10 o'clock. What do you do? Do you stay around or do you go? So what it does to me is it just makes me stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm blaming that on the ferries. It's not my fault. It's the ferries' fault.
I've been in that situation once or twice. It's strange living your life by the ferry timetable.
Yes.
And do you have a favorite Vashon Island tradition?
Well, one of my favorite traditions was didn't happen this year, and that is the pumpkins at Minglement. So every Halloween until last year, they bring in a bunch of pumpkins at Minglement, and people carve pumpkins. And they take them home, and they carve them, or they carve them there, and then they line them up on the railing all in front of Minglement. And I think there are like over 100 pumpkins, and it's really cool to see all of them there, all lit up at night.
Right.
It's a lot of fun.
I think I've heard about this. I think I saw a photo probably taken by our friend Ray Fortner.
Yes, probably so.
Of this. Yeah, well, I'm sad that that tradition didn't happen this year, maybe 2019.
Just talk to Eva and see if you can get her to do it again next year.
Okay, all right. I'll put a word in. And where can people find you to learn more about you and your work?
You probably can't.
Okay.
But you can go to the VIP website at vipp.org or the Voice of Ash on site and go to shows and hosts and look at Boogie Back to Texas. And there's a little blurb about what got me to this show. And there also is going to be a show or two that it's up online. So you can listen to it on the internet.
Excellent. Technology once again.
There you go.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today, Jeff. It's been really awesome to get to know you a little bit better. And thank you all for listening. Again, this is Inspired Island on Voice of Vashon, KVSH 101.9 FM LP, Vashon Island, Washington. Until next time, stay inspired.